traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit energycitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.
Let's face it, in our busy lives, we don't eat enough fruits and vegetables. In fact, according to the CDC, only 1 in 10 Americans are eating the recommended daily amount of fruits and vegetables each day, missing out on essential vitamins, minerals, fibers, and antioxidants. And that's where Balance in Nature comes in. Balance in Nature sources only the best produce, free from pesticides, heavy metals, and harmful bacteria. And Balance in Nature is the best fruit and vegetable product on the market. They use only fresh whole fruits and vegetables inside each capsule. They don't use any GMOs, fillers, binding agents, or preservatives of any kind. You're getting real food, real science, real nutrition. I would never endorse a product that I don't use myself, and since using Balance in Nature, I feel more alert, I have more energy, my focus is sharper, and I feel great. Live life to the fullest and choose Balance in Nature. And guess what? PAS Report listeners can get 35% off the first preferred order. Start getting the recommended daily amount of fruits and vegetables you need by using code PAS at balanceofnature.com.
Welcome to the PAS Report Weekly Roundup Podcast. The PAS Report provides an honest analysis on the critical issues that matter to you without the biased media filters. Here's your host, Professor Nicholas Giordano.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the PAS Report Podcast. Here's your host, Nick Giordano. I got another great episode lined up for you because I want to say how we still live in the greatest country that has ever existed throughout the course of human history. There's a lot of people who want to constantly criticize this country. But if you notice, I never criticize America itself. I never criticize the intent of our country as a whole. Rather, my criticisms are always reserved for the government and the officials, both those that are elected and those that are appointed. And this is an important distinction. It's important because too many try to lump the idea of America and government together. But they are separate. Many of us have forgotten that it's our duty to always ask questions, question the government, question the officials. We have to do this in an attempt to try and keep the government honest. It's our civic obligation to be skeptical of government and to be critical of those that hold power. There has been this constant struggle since our founding, trying to find the proper balance between the idea of liberty and order. Our founders did understand that the more order that exists within society, the more power the government has to operate as a police state. Too much liberty, and you create the conditions for anarchy and chaos. As a matter of fact, James Wilson of Pennsylvania, one of the little-known founding fathers, stated it best when he said, quote, "Without liberty, law loses its nature and its name and becomes oppression. Without law, liberty also loses its nature and its name and becomes licentiousness." Basically meaning disregard for laws, rules, norms. When we look at our God-given rights, they've been under assault for quite some time, and that's what I want to focus on in this episode. There are many who are consistently trying to redefine and reshape the conversation, watering down the true intent, especially when it comes to First Amendment right to freedom of speech, Second Amendment right to bear arms. There are many who've undermined these founding principles due to a failed education system where we don't really teach about our founding, the original intent, the documents, the Constitution, the personal writings of the founding fathers. And too many of us are quick to surrender these principles, these ideals. See, our failed education system and the media make it as if the government is the country, and therefore nothing less than compliance and obedience will be tolerated. When you question the government and its policies, they'll attack your patriotism, your loyalty to the country. They'll call you names. They'll label you as a domestic terrorist for expressing anti-government, anti-authority sentiment. Now, before I jump into this topic, make sure you click the follow button for the podcast so you never miss an episode, and don't forget to visit the PAS Report website, PASReport.com. And one of the reasons I decided to do this episode was all the controversy surrounding Elon Musk's purchase of Twitter, or his attempted purchase of Twitter. Of course, the rejects go to the threat of the democracy argument. I'm so sick of hearing this. You know, if Elon Musk buys it, this is the biggest threat to democracy. It's interesting because Elon Musk announced that he wants to purchase Twitter to restore the concept of free speech. Like me, he believes that the platforms like Twitter are the 21st century public square, and therefore First Amendment principles apply. Principles like the freedom of speech. Those that oppose him argue that freedom of speech is dangerous. It's a threat to democracy. That content moderation is necessary. These people have a warped view of what free societies look like. They have a warped view of what democratic principles and this idea of democracy actually entails. You notice how they constantly use this threat to democracy argument every time their social order is threatened. And they view the people as a bigger threat to the system rather than the government itself. In fact, they view the people as a bigger threat to the system than anything else. And their logic is completely flawed, but it's intentional. That's the problem here. It's nefarious and intentional. First off, they want to blur the lines between what a democracy is and what a constitutional republic is. They are two very different things. Yet they constantly push this idea of democracy as if that's what we have. Over the last century, they've used these terms interchangeably in order to undermine the safeguards that we built within the system. See, if their amorphous definition of democracy becomes the norm, then they get to define what their version of democracy actually looks like. The word democracy comes from ancient Greece, demos kratia. Demos meaning the people, and kratos or kratia meaning authority and power to rule. So the people's authority. In one breath, you have all these elitists. They say the people should have the authority to rule, right? This idea of democracy. But in the very next breath, they argue that they are the ones that get to determine what the people's authority actually is. That those in power will be the ones that decide what we can and cannot say, what we can and cannot hear, what we can and cannot see. In order for the people to have more authority, power must be relinquished to the ruling elite, as they are the true guardians of this so-called democracy. You see how that works. To them, someone like Elon Musk is an existential threat to their power. Here you have someone that wants to buy a social media platform to promote the idea of free political speech and the free exchange of ideas. And he actually has the money to do this. Now, I know it's a novel concept to our overlords, but you have a billionaire who is a South African native, a naturalized American citizen, who has a better appreciation for our values and the American political philosophy than most natural-born Americans. And I suspect that's the case with many naturalized citizens. On top of that, he doesn't need their money. He doesn't need to kowtow to anyone. That's why he's such a threat to them. He's someone with power that doesn't have to bow to the established order. In essence, they can't control him. That's what makes him so dangerous. This is not to say that Musk is better or more important than any one of us. It's not to say that I agree with Elon Musk on every issue out there, because I don't. There are some who want to place Elon Musk on a pedestal, others who want to destroy him. However, when it comes to free speech, Musk and I are in universal agreement. We're on the same page. I love the fact that he annoys the ruling elite and sends them into this frenzy. It's hilarious to watch. There is no better illustration of this than Max Boot. Most of you probably have no clue who this guy is. He's a pathetic individual. He's a neocon. He promotes the established order where the ruling elite get to make all the decisions. The problem is he's actually influential and has been involved in crafting American policy for decades, especially foreign policy. He follows the similar background of so many of these ruling elites, attending UC Berkeley, going to Yale University. Now, he's interesting because he bills himself as a conservative that believes in limited government, but that's a joke in and of itself. I mean, this is a guy that's constantly promoted the expansion of the government apparatus, whether it's the surveillance state that we're witnessing today, whether it's spying on the American people, determining what they can and cannot say, whether it's going into foreign countries and overthrowing governments there. He is someone that wants this big government apparatus. And people like Max Boot have been responsible for some of the biggest policy disasters over the course of the last 20 or 30 years. To show you exactly what I mean, where you have this powerful elite that promotes this idea of democracy, but they're really pushing authoritarianism. That's what it comes down to. And here's a tweet he put out. Quote, "I am frightened by the impact on society and politics if Elon Musk acquires Twitter. He seems to believe that on social media, anything goes. For democracy to survive, we need more content moderation, not less." Look at the key words he uses. Democracy, survive, more content moderation. Think about how he ties these words together. First of all, content moderation is nothing more than a form of censorship. but he knows he can't use the word censorship because that doesn't sound very conservative and it's not very popular. That sounds a little too authoritarianism, too big brothery. He opts for content moderation because it sounds nicer. It doesn't have the same negative connotations that censorship does. See, people like Max Boot, they try to lump everything together. If you don't like content moderation, then you support things like threats to violence, racism, terrorism, pornography, lies, propaganda. Understand, when people like Elon Musk and myself are talking about freedom of speech, it's not an anything-goes proposition. We're talking about political speech and the free exchange of ideas. I know, this is very hard to understand. And this brings me to my second point. When it comes to the idea of content moderation, who does Max Boot want to be in charge of the content moderation? Who gets to determine what content is actually moderated? Surely he's not talking about ordinary folks like you and I. In his version of democracy, we will entrust those in power to determine the levels of content moderation and what can and cannot be said. We don't get a say. And if the peasant class decides to post things that the powers that be don't like, then that's where the content moderation kicks in. And the censorship minions out there, they silence those who dare to go against certain narratives. When you have the lines between the government, the media, big tech, corporations, when they're blurring, when they're all merging into one, people like Max Boot believe only the societal elite get to have this power, not ordinary folks like you and I. See, you can't be trusted to have a brain and formulate your own conclusions using reason, the ability to observe and analyze information, forming a logical conclusion. You must be directed to the conclusion of their choosing. That's what must take place. That's what people like Max Boot want. Our founding fathers despise the people like Max Boot. It's not what the founding fathers intended. They believed that the government exists only to perform those services that the people are unable to provide for themselves. And I'm sorry, every single one of you out there is plenty capable of looking at information and determining whether that information is valid or not. You don't need this content moderation, the social media censors to kick in. The obvious example when we look at what our government was intended for is national defense. See, government power at all levels was always meant to be limited and enumerated. Now these people want to give this unending power to the government, but only if they control it. Our founding fathers understood that governments will always be a flawed entity. When you think about who creates government, the flaws are pretty apparent. They understood that governments are created by people, by human beings. And since human beings are the ones that create government, our flaws are going to be instilled within the government. You know, human beings are capable of some really great characteristics. We have really great attributes of nobility, virtue, prudence, love, compassion, empathy. But we also have negative characteristics as well. Lust, anger, envy, jealousy, greed. We're flawed. And while we may know something is wrong, we may still choose to do it, regardless of the consequences. We are imperfect people, and therefore anything we create is also going to be imperfect, particularly government. That's why it's so dangerous when you give government so much power. When it comes to our natural human rights, the founders understood that the government is going to be the biggest threat, because the government could do one of two things. They could either promote the responsible exercise of human free will, or the government can reject natural law and free will and become a tool of injustice. History has shown us the natural inclination of governments and those in power. It's all about control. This is why the founding fathers wanted to create something different, wanted to create something unique and special. They wanted to create a system that would protect free will and at the same time be able to maintain societal order. As Thomas Paine said, government, even in its best state, is but a necessary evil. We need it in order to maintain order within society, to provide for things that we can't provide for ourselves. At the same time, the founders recognized that government would constantly seek to grow and expand its powers. They recognized that as time goes on, people will make more demands on the government, and they're going to be willing to grant the government even more power and authority to tackle the issues. As government power expands, our liberties are going to contract, our sovereignty erodes. The founders, they had this distrust of government, wanting to limit its power through the separation of powers and checks and balances. And yet here we are, 230 plus years later, where many of us don't have any distrust. We overly trust the government. And the perfect example is this idea of content moderation, which is nothing more than a form of speech control. People have been conditioned in this country to believe that the government is the be-all, end-all. They've been conditioned to believe that if you're skeptical of government, or if you question the government's motives and intents, you're anti-authority, you're anti-government extremist. If I apply the Max Boot standards of today, our founding fathers would have been deemed as extremists and domestic terrorists as well. Oh wait, they were actually deemed that by King George. Our failed education system never taught the intent of the United States. They've glossed over things like the Declaration of Independence or the United States Constitution, never fully explained the Bill of Rights and the importance of the Bill of Rights. They were never taught what these documents actually say and mean. Instead, they were pushing this idea that government only has good intentions. Government's only going to do things to work what's in your best interest, that when the government is doing something, that the government's not wrong, that the government's not going to make mistakes, because we as individuals, we can't be trusted. We can't figure out for ourselves what's in our best interest, that all these people in charge, the overlords, only they have the noble intent. It's why many of them act as the public virtue signalers, where they and only them can protect this idea of democratic principles in the republic, that they are the guardians of democracy. What we are witnessing today is due to decades of social conditioning, moving away from the idea that our rights are inherent, and instead moving towards the idea that the government is the grantor of our God-given rights, our God-given liberties. It's why more than 60% of Americans agree with restricting speech, and 51% want to amend the First Amendment. Almost 60% of those between the ages of 21 and 38 say that the Constitution goes too far in allowing hate speech in modern America and it should be rewritten. 54% said violators of hate speech should be thrown in jail. Never once did they ask themselves who gets to determine what constitutes hate speech and what doesn't, especially in this day and age where we're constantly told by the leftists that words are violence. It's why the Foundation for Individual Rights in Education found more than 50% of students want to see educational institutions restrict intolerant opinions. I mean, here you have college students, education, the basis for education, to ask questions, to expand your mind, to expand thoughts and opinions. And yet you have half of the student body that wants to see these educational institutions suppress thought, suppress opinions, suppress free speech. 66% of Americans want social media companies to remove offensive content from their platforms. Again, never once asking themselves who gets to deem what's offensive and what's not. 70% of millennials say they are likely to vote socialist. Only 57% of millennials believe that the Declaration of Independence provides more freedom and equality than the Communist Manifesto. 1 in 3 millennials have a favorable view of communism, even though most can't even define what communism is. I mean, when I say 70% of millennials believe, or 57% of millennials believe that the Declaration of Independence provides more freedom and equality than the Communist Manifesto, understand that I will guarantee you, I will nearly bet my life, that 90% of these people never even read the Communist Manifesto, and I could guarantee you that probably upwards of 80% never even read the Declaration of Independence, something that they should have been reading since kindergarten should have been brought to their attention. These numbers directly correlate with the trends we see in our education system, where only 24% of students are proficient in civics and government, 12% proficient in American history. And these percentages haven't changed all that much over the course of the last 30 years. This is why we're seeing such a lack of regard for actual liberty and our core principles. This is why people are so freely willing to give up these concepts that have led us to become the greatest country to ever exist. The point is that we don't teach real American history anymore. Instead, we see this push to teach a false history like the 1619 Project, false history like critical race theory and diversity, equity, and inclusion, which isn't history at all. Understand that. It has nothing to do with history. We don't teach civics. We don't teach about government. We don't teach what it means to be a good citizen. Instead, schools are pushing political activism. That's what they're doing. We're witnessing the results in real time, and that's why the ruling elite have successfully been able to change what people's authority actually means, what demos kratia actually means. It's why people have continually granted more and more authority to the government at the expense of their own liberty, constantly being taught that America was born in sin, that it's an unjust country, and that the government has to be empowered further to overcompensate for these past injustices. See, that's the difference between me and them. Remember at the beginning of this episode when I said my criticisms are reserved for the government and the officials, both the elected and the appointed officials, not the country, not the idea of America, not the United States. They criticize the country and the idea of America while promoting the idea that the government is the solution. And it's kind of ironic, too, because they say that essentially the country, born in sin through this government, has perpetuated institutionalized racism. And now they want that same government that has had all these failures to fix the problem. Try to figure that one out. But when you actually do figure it out, you realize that's the point. What they really want to do is empower themselves even further. They want to import the communist Chinese model of speech controls. That's their idea of content moderation. They actually admire how the communist regime of China has this unending authority to control what the people can and cannot say, to control what they see, control what they hear, what they believe. The communist regime has been able to do this very successfully through its content moderation policies and the push for this idea of a social credit system. Take, what's his name? He's a former Obama appointee, Richard Stengel. Richard Stengel is someone who believes, so this is a smart guy, not going to say that he's a moron. He is smart. He's a former official, and he calls the idea of freedom of speech a design flaw within the system, a design flaw within the system. He argues that because the internet amplifies voices, people should not be able to express their thoughts or opinions if that speech is deemed unacceptable by the powers that be or not. See, Stengel, he's a leftist, and while Max Boot pushes himself off as a conservative, they are both supporting and arguing the same thing. There's unity between these two different competing factions that exist. They epitomize the ruling class and what they think of the people. That's where their commonalities lie. Freedom of speech was just fine when only the ruling class had the megaphones, when the ruling class was the one who had the loudest voices. However, since the internet gave voice to ordinary individuals, well, now freedom of speech becomes the problem. Now we need content moderation. But understand that the content moderation is only necessary if you express thoughts or opinions that go against particular narratives, their narratives. Remember, they're the ones who will be the judges of what is deemed acceptable speech and what will be considered unacceptable speech. When it comes to censorship, these power-hungry fools, they're the ones that are calling for content moderation. In reality, it's just a massive censorship program. It's importing the communist system here in the United States, and anything that goes against their narrow-minded point of view is going to be deemed anti-government, anti-authority. In a piece written by Harvard Law professor Jack Goldsmith, he argues, in the great debate of the past two decades about freedom versus control of the network, China was largely right and the United States was largely wrong. As significant, monitoring and speech controls are inevitable components of a mature and flourishing internet, and governments must play a large role in such practices to ensure that the internet is compatible with social norms and values. It's not the government that gets to determine what the social norms and values are. It's we the people. And what you have here is influential people, people that have a lot of influence over the system. They also have power. When we're told to listen to the experts, these are the types of people that they're talking about. And I could provide endless examples of them all trying to argue the same exact thing. Now, they don't mention communist China's content moderation system out loud, but it's the communist Chinese censorship model they want. Just look at what gets deemed misinformation and disinformation. Look at the narratives that are accepted and which ones are rejected. Look at what posts get false and misleading labels and which ones don't. Most of the time, it only goes in one direction. You don't see crazy conspiracy theories like the moon landing or JFK's assassination or, you know, 9/11 attacks being an inside job. You never see those posts get rated false or misleading. You don't see posts accusing the former president of Russian collusion get rated false and misleading, even though the whole Russian collusion narrative has been thoroughly debunked. We had an example just 2 weeks ago, right? You had all these reports, White House call logs missing from January 6th, Trump's hiding 7 hours gap in phone calls from the White House, blah, 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 headline after headline. panel saying, oh, he's obstructing justice, we need to arrest him, and all this other crap. And guess what? It was false information, wasn't true, like anything else, that was debunked. Do you think the social media censors, the tech minions, do you think they went back and put false and misleading labels on all those posts? No, of course not. So it's pretty evident that this so-called content moderation is actually an ideological weapon that's going to be used against political opponents. That, let's be honest here, that's what it's going to be used for, targeting political opponents. Freedom of speech, not content moderation, is the key ingredient when it comes to keeping this republic strong. Not democracy, republic. And without freedom of speech, everything crumbles. We are like the one country in the world that actually has a real value for freedom of speech. A real value. And Benjamin Franklin, he said it best, that freedom of speech is the principal pillar of a free government. When it goes away, when it's taken away, the Constitution of that free society will quickly dissolve. And that's exactly what's going to happen if we allow this content moderation stuff to go forward. You have George Washington, who stated, if men are to be precluded from offering their sentiments on a matter which may involve the most serious and alarming consequences that can invite the consideration of mankind, reason is of no use to us. The freedom of speech may be taken away, and dumb and silent, we may be led like sheep to the slaughter. It's funny, because the same people who despise the Founding Fathers and constantly denigrate them as evil white men are the same ones who say, well, the Founding Fathers never intended freedom of speech to be absolute, that they always intended that the government has a responsibility to regulate speech. And whenever you hear someone say that, understand they have no clue what they're talking about. They know nothing about our history. I mean, they're so lazy that they failed to pick up a book, or they're nefarious. It's the same when it comes to the gun control debate and the Second Amendment. You have people that are completely clueless. Take President Joe Biden. Every time he gives a speech about guns, he says the same exact thing, almost verbatim, because once again, he's got dementia, so he has to memorize only certain lines, and he could only memorize them for so long. The Founding Fathers, they never intended for us to have weapons of war. They never intended for the people to have these military-grade weapons. People couldn't go out and buy a cannon. Actually, yes, they could. It's completely false. That was actually the exact intent of the Second Amendment. The Second Amendment doesn't exist for hunting. It's not necessarily for a home invasion, although that's important. You got to protect property. The Second Amendment primarily exists to serve as a protection against an all-powerful tyrannical government, a government that usurps the people's authority, that a government that becomes abusive, forces us to live under absolute despotism. It is our obligation to overthrow that regime. It's laid out pretty clearly in the Declaration of Independence in the second paragraph. Doesn't take much to truly understand what the Founding Fathers were talking about. And I'm not calling for a revolution against the current government. I know how the leftists will take it out of context. Oh, he's calling to overthrow the government, blah, blah, blah. No, that's not what I'm calling for. We could, at this point in time, we could still resolve our differences at the ballot boxes. It's become a little bit harder because of all the shenanigans going on, but we could still resolve our differences there as of right now. But the sole purpose of the Second Amendment was to actually overthrow government. Now, if you want to make an argument that the times have changed and we need to revisit this, that's fine. We could have that debate. I encourage that debate. I don't sit there and say that we shouldn't be able to talk about these things. If we think that it's time as a society, I mean, obviously, we've advanced to a certain degree where we don't allow military assault weapons. I'm not someone who believes that people should be walking around with rocket-propelled grenades. There's some people that want to arm teachers. I think that's a really bad idea. Do you really want to arm teachers? Understand, most of them are leftists. I don't want them having a gun. I mean, you believe me, you see some of these people in academia, you do not want to put a firearm in their hand. If we go down a path where we think something like that's necessary, I'm someone that believes that government does have the right to implement some type of regulation. There should be certain types of training and licensing that goes on. But my point is, we could debate the issue of the Second Amendment. However, let's stop lying and mischaracterizing the intent behind the Second Amendment. But these people are able to get away with it. They're able to get away with the lies and the mischaracterizations. They're able to do it again because we have a failed education system that doesn't teach them about the American government and our history. It's much easier to manipulate the debate when people are unaware of the true nature of the Constitution, when they're unaware of the true nature of the Declaration of Independence and the Founding Fathers. And we're in a position now where you have a whole bunch of lazy people out there who are too damn lazy to do their own research on this issue. And then you have the nefarious people who are in power, who want to take advantage of all those lazy people out there. The whole intent behind the Second Amendment is solely for the purposes of war. It solely exists for the purposes of war. I'm not going to sit here and pretend that's not what it exists for. Founding fathers were students of history. They understood governments will always seek to acquire more and more power. Governments are going to be much more cautious in trying to acquire that power if they have an armed citizenry that they have to worry about. And they scream, weapons of war, militias. It's all about militias. That's what the Second Amendment refers to, not individuals. Again, don't be lazy. Just look at the written works of the Founding Fathers. You have Alexander Hamilton. He spoke about militias when it came to Federalist 29. He put it in there. Read it yourself. You don't need my interpretation of it. Read it yourself. He explains the idea of a militia. He says, this will not only lessen the call for military establishments, but if circumstances should at any time oblige the governments to form an army of any magnitude, that army can never be formidable to the liberties of the people. While there is a large body of citizens, little if at all inferior to them in discipline and use of arms, who stand ready to defend their own rights and those of their fellow citizens. This appears to me the only substitute that could be devised for a standing army and the best possible security against it if it should exist. Clearly, when Alexander Hamilton was writing that, the militia is that of ordinary citizens. We as citizens are not subservient to the government and its officials. Although that's what they want you to believe. Thomas Jefferson understood this as well. He said, what country can preserve its liberties if their rulers are not warned from time to time that their people preserve the spirit of resistance? Let them take arms. It's not to say that the founders encouraged anyone and everyone to have a firearm. While they did believe that we as citizens have a right to bear arms, they also believed that we as citizens have to exercise discipline. We have to have self-control. That you can't just overthrow the government because of light and transient causes. Meaning you can't overthrow government because you don't like their policies. Understand that the officials, the elected officials, not the appointed ones, they really annoy me because Congress doesn't hold anyone accountable. But the elected officials, they have to practice statesmanship. Okay, they have to be able to temper our expectations in order to get things done and make compromises. They're cowards, they don't do that anymore. But again, our founding fathers were pretty clear. They believed in the right to bear arms. They believed in an armed citizenry. Now, there are some who argue that the founding fathers wanted to disarm society and only allow those who were part of a registered militia to bear arms. Again, false. I already state that. What they do is they point to a committee resolution that was pushed through Congress in 1776. I believe it was March 1776. And they argue that this resolution states that anyone who didn't pledge allegiance to the government could be disarmed. However, that's not what the resolution says. Again, if you read the resolution yourself, you're plenty capable. The resolution clearly states that those who are notoriously disaffected to the cause of America or who have not associated and shall refuse to associate to defend by arms these United Colonies should be disarmed. What? That's a big difference right there. Our Founding Fathers didn't say that you have to pledge allegiance to the government. That's not what the Founding Fathers were talking about. It was about an allegiance to this concept of the United States of America and the American political philosophy. That's what it was allegiance to. That we were starting to build out this form of nationhood, this sense of nationalism, which isn't going to be easy to do, but the Founding Fathers understand the importance that no country can survive without nationalism within it. Yet our ruling elite, they'll never tell you that. They'll say, if you believe in nationalism, you're a racist, you're a domestic terrorist. You hate people of color. That's how juvenile their arguments are. Our ruling class makes it as if government and the country are one and the same, that it's the same entity, that if you dare criticize the government and don't offer blind allegiance to the government and its policies, you're a domestic terrorist, an enemy of the state. But that's only when you don't comport to their narratives. That's only when that happens. When someone is in office that they don't like the former president, then you could be critical of government all you want. In fact, they'll say it's your patriotic duty. So you see how hypocritical they are. You see the frauds that they are. You see how they just have this lack of trust in ordinary people. It's clearly evident. They believe we exist to serve them in the state. We're the peasant class. We're the cogs in the wheel. They don't realize it's the other way around. But we have to take our responsibility because we are partly to blame. it's been the hands-off approach that has gotten us to this point. It's been the constant calls for the government to get involved in every single issue, thinking that government can possibly solve all the problems. It's blindly accepting the idea that the government has to expand its power and capabilities in the name of safety and security through things like the Patriot Act. Understand that when we allow the government to expand its power and authority in the name of security, it only serves as an illusion of safety and security. I don't care. You can pass every law that you want in the world when it comes to the idea of gun restrictions. You're not stopping mass shootings. And that's why we have that conversation. It's all about the mass shootings. You may be able to prevent some if you do a gun confiscation, but you're not stopping the problem. It's an illusion. Just like it's impossible for the government to stop all terror attacks that might exist and might happen. They may be able to prevent some, but others are going to happen. Just look at what took place in the New York City subway. I mean, that guy was out in the open talking about Frank James, the white supremacist. Amazing. He's now being labeled as a right-wing extremist that was influenced by white supremacy ideology. That's how loony these people have become. That's how demented they are. So here you have a black man that went on YouTube, was ranting and raving against white people, against black people too, but mostly white people and how evil we are and blah, blah, blah. But he's a white supremacist now. But government wasn't able to stop that, now was it? And yet we're supposed to sit here and pretend that government could solve all the problems. I mean, you know, just once, it's simple questions. That's all I always tell you to ask. Ask the simple question, because you get your answer pretty quickly. Over the course of the last 100 years, is government more powerful today than ever before or less powerful today than ever? As government authority has constantly expanded, government power expanding over the last 100 years, have they solved the problems, or do we now have more problems? Have the problems metastasized? Because government got involved in all these different issues in order to solve them. I mean, that's why we went to government to help us solve these problems. And yet the problems are worse off than before. Look at something like education. It's always the best example. The Department of Education gets created in 1979 with the intent to improve student performance. And yet student proficiency levels are worse today. Our education system is worse off today. Might there be a correlation between that? Ask yourself, you know, before you go and enjoy the rest of your day, ask yourself, if we do go forward with this idea of more content moderation, if we do allow the executive branch to implement restrictive gun measures, who do you think it's going to empower more? Do you think it's going to empower the government more, or we the people? Your answer tells you everything you need to know. You don't need me to help you figure that one out. And that's the way you should talk about it. That's the way you should approach it. Now, if you enjoy the content I provide, if you find the content informative, please take 30 seconds, write a review, leave a 5-star rating on any podcast platform that allows it. Also, hit the follow button so you never miss an episode. And don't forget to share this episode with family, friends, and on social media. We have to educate people, re-educate them, on what the core American principles are and why they're so important. We cannot continue to allow these jackals to keep on usurping more power and authority and determining the things that we could say, the things we can't say, and what we could believe, what we can't believe. We have our own brains. We have our own minds. Government is simply a means to an end. It's not the be-all, end-all. And our God-given liberties, our rights, are inherent, not from some bureaucratic pencil neck down in Washington, D.C. So with that being said, I want to thank you for joining me, and I'll be back next week with other great episodes of the PAS Report podcast, so make sure you check it out.
Thank you for listening to the PAS Report Weekly Roundup Podcast.
Have a good one. Bye.
Be sure to rate, share, and subscribe to the podcast so you'll never miss an episode. Also, visit PASReport.com and follow us on Twitter at PAS Report.
Traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit EnergyCitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.
Ever tried reading while jogging, cooking, or even juggling flaming torches? Yeah, doesn't end well. But with audiobooks.com, you can conquer books without the circus act. Dive into over 450,000 titles, including more than 10,000 free ones. Get hooked on a bestseller. find your next obsession, or finally read that classic you've been avoiding since high school. And here's the inside scoop. Sign up today for a free 30-day trial and snag your first three audiobooks on the house. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.